Previously on Chunky Infant Ghost Stories.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to commemorate the wonderful life of Chunky Infant Ghost Stories and join together in the sorrow of its passing and demise. And wait, what? It's not completely dead? Not yet? Only mostly dead? Okay, I think I saw that in a movie once. All right, let's see where this is going.
This is Infants on Thrones.
Chunky Infant Ghost Stories.
Chunky Infant Ghost Stories.
Welcome back to Infants on Thrones. I'm Glenn Ostlund, and I've always loved, just loved, this Halloween season. Now, I have these really fond memories as a little kid making jack-o'-lantern-shaped English muffin pizzas in Miss Washington's first grade class at Booker T. Elementary in Mesa, Arizona. Like taking the, what were those, the Kraft single cheese squares and cutting out triangle eyes and then like a jagged teeth mouth thing, and then taking that cheese and putting it over the top of a Prego slathered English muffin, putting it in a toaster oven, bringing it out, eating it. It was magical. So I made about 100 of them one day. A little overkill maybe, but I loved Halloween. I would start making Halloween decorations as early as May or June, and the first big like group project that I ever really worked on, or like initiative that I took to do something fun, this first party that I ever planned or attended was a haunted house that I did with a girl named Regina Allen when we were in the fourth grade. And we planned this thing together for weeks. We would sit in her bedroom and, you know, like map out everything that we were going to do, all the tricks and the games and the haunted house and stuff like that for our friends. And, you know, our parents thought it was so cute because we were fourth graders doing this. But, you know, this was me. I loved Halloween. On my mission, we made these elaborate haunted spook alleys for the Japanese ward members. We'd get cardboard boxes and would break them down and create these little, I don't know, tubes, I guess, that people could crawl through. And we'd make a maze and put fans in it and, you know, like all these little things that were inside of this. It was totally dark. You'd crawl through it and then you would come out of this haunted maze into a black light filled glowing dot room that had black plastic on the walls and the ceiling and the floor, and then white construction paper or just, you know, you can use printer paper cut into circles on the wall so they glowed in the black light. They popped out, and then there were a couple of people that were also wearing black trash bags and had the dots on them, so they blend into the walls. And as they walk around, you as an observer think that the room is moving or spinning. It's this really cool optical effect. We would do that on my mission. I still do that sometimes. I did it last year. I'm not going to do it this year because it's too much work, but I just love Halloween to the point of overkill. I always seem to go a little overboard with my love for Halloween. So, having said that, it should come as no surprise that nearly 2 weeks ago, I got this Halloween-fueled, harebrained idea as I was sitting at my computer, at the very computer that I'm sitting at right now. And I thought to myself, wouldn't it be kind of cool, kind of fun, to have one little ghost story episode for every single day of October for Infants on Thrones? And I thought that idea, and I just started doing it. I didn't consult any of the fellow infants about it. I still really haven't at all. I've just been doing it and having a ton of fun with it until it started to get a little overwhelming. And you probably heard, if you've been listening, I started realizing, oh my gosh, what have I taken on here? And I couldn't tell if what I was doing was annoying to listeners with this daily barrage of spooky, silly nonsense, or if you were enjoying it, or what. And as you may have heard with yesterday's chunk, I was ready to scrap it all. But then two things happened. So I want to explain that. The first and very small thing, somebody commented on the website and the podcast was coming from inside the house. What a brilliant comment. I read that and went, ah, there is untapped potential still in these chunky infant ghost stories. What a brilliant observation and comment. Wow, how come I didn't think of that? Brilliant. And the podcast were coming from inside the house. Oh, I love it. I love it. Great comment. Thank you for leaving that. And then as I was chatting on Facebook with a dear friend and listener, she said that she really liked getting the daily mini episodes, even if it was hard to track any continuity from one story to the next, you know, with all the little chunks. And she suggested that rather than scrapping the whole idea, maybe I talk to somebody who she knows, who is a professional ghostbuster of sorts. And I don't want to say that in any kind of like mocking way, but that's what this guy does. He's a paranormal investigator. And she said, I'll see if he's willing to come on the podcast and talk with you. And it all happened really, really quickly. It was great. I got in touch with him. We recorded a conversation last night, and it's super, super fascinating. So I am going to play that for you today. And here's the good news. I'm not going to break it up into multiple 5-minute chunks just to meet this arbitrary goal that I set of having one single small chunky episode for every day of October. You know, if you do the math, this commitment, this insane commitment that I made for 31 5-minute-ish episodes, that's about 2.5 hours or more of audio. And what I've done already with 12 chunks is a little over an hour of that. So with today's episode, maybe I'm square. I'm just saying this because I want to make sure I get credit for it. I want to make sure I get credit for meeting this arbitrary goal that I set for myself that nobody asked me to do and nobody's really expecting. But anyway, I want to get the credit for it because, you know, this is just my own unique brand of gentle insanity. So before I get to the interview, let me first read to you the profile of the guy that I'm going to be talking with. Okay, so his name is Ryan Straub, and the website that I'm looking at is called Third Eye Chronicles. And instead of third being spelled out or the number three, it's the Roman numeral, like IIIRD, Third Eye Chronicles. And he's got a quote on here for his profile from Stephen King that says, "Sometimes human places create inhuman monsters," which, having talked to him now, I can understand why he chose that quote. So here's what he says about himself here. "My name is Ryan Straub. I am a spiritual investigator and consultant. While my interest in the paranormal began when I was young, I didn't understand my role," and he puts that in quotes, "in the field until I was 16 years old." And I think he puts it in quotes because he recognizes the skepticism that people will have behind what he's doing. He's very aware of it and feels that himself, which I think is this really interesting part of who he is, and you'll hear in the interview. He was in a car accident when he was a teenager, and he talks about that a little bit in our interview, and it did a couple of things for him. It made him recognize that he feels alone. He suffered some head injuries and concussions and started feeling what he describes are like mediumistic abilities, but he was skeptical about those and afraid of them, afraid what it meant. But he leaned into that fear and decided to explore it and try to understand it from a very scientific his background was engineering. This is the kind of mind that he has. So he wanted to understand that, so he began investigating that. And this led him to work with people who, you know, he's a spiritual investigator and a consultant. So people will hire him when they have paranormal activities and ask him to come and help them understand what's going on. And so you'll hear him talk about that today in this interview. And, you know, another thing that happened yesterday that I just want to acknowledge before I move on, and this might seem kind of weird, especially coming in a Halloween episode, but I want you as a listener to know that the reason that I do Infants on Thrones and have for, you know, as long as I've done it, I love it. I love You know, it's hard for me to say, but this is really inside of me and I want to get it out. I love you guys. I love you as a listener. I love that you're interested in this weird kind of shit that we do on Infants on Thrones, and that you keep coming back for more, and that you like it, and that we're all damaged. You know, I mean, the thing that we all have in common with this podcast, at least for the most, is whether we experience, I think most of us experienced Mormonism and then the faith crisis and all of the pain and trauma that goes along with that. I know there are other listeners that haven't gone through that, but we're united by this curiosity about the subject matter and this vulnerability that we all have as humans, that I think this season, and again, I'm not going to get totally pedantic into it because I've always loved the Halloween season, but there's also, as a folklorist, and I learned this in graduate school, it is kind of this legend cycle as the seasons are moving towards death. Winter, you know, everything's dying, and so there is like this heightened awareness, and it's almost like the human spirit comes out and says, you know what, nature, I know you're getting cold, I know you're getting dark, we're going to get brighter, we're going to get warmer, and we're going to do that through festivals, we're going to do it through group interaction, and so we've got these great holidays right one after another, starting in October with Halloween, and then our Thanksgiving, and then Christmas, or Hanukkah, or Kwanzaa, or what was the Seinfeld one? Festivus, you know. But it is this festive time of the year. Legend cycle is what folklorists talk about, and it's a time when legends and beliefs are more accessible and explored. You get them more. Anyway, I'm rambling at this point. Let me get to the interview. I just wanted to say, I just want you guys to know that this is an act of love, and you're worth it. You are worth the time and energy that it takes for me to do Chunky Infant Ghost Stories, whether you like it or not, whether I like it or not. And I think one of the reasons that I'm thinking along these lines, I just watched the documentary on HBO about Steven Spielberg. Highly recommend that to everybody to watch at least once, if not multiple times. It's amazing. And you're going to be hearing over the next few weeks and maybe longer conversations that are inspired by the book Sapiens. We've had some of those with Infants on Thrones. I'm working on a project right now with Michael Ferguson called The Spiritual Brain. I did an interview with him. You're going to hear that. And it's this whole idea that I've been thinking of and kind of marinating in, that there's got to be something more to spirituality than just the supernatural woo-woo stuff that that we've rejected as leaving the Mormon Church. We've rejected that brand of spirituality, and maybe all brands of spirituality. And I'm sure there's a spectrum of people out there that, you know, how much you accept or reject even the idea or the word spirituality. But as I'm watching this Steven Spielberg documentary, I'm thinking about him as a spiritual person. And by spiritual, I'm talking about the inner workings of the human mind. Emotions and feelings and thoughts and instincts, you know, these kind of core things. When we were talking about Jonathan Haidt and The Righteous Mind, you remember the allegory of the elephant that was talked about over and over again, as being this emotional core that really determines how we see the world before we put any like logical thought into it. It's just like this instinctual feeling that we come. And that's how Steven Spielberg makes movies. He takes what he feels and he puts that onto the screen in the form of his images, the way that he tells his story visually, using John Williams as an amazing composer to create these feelings. And so what he's really doing is passing feelings along to people, and they receive it through his art. And I started wondering, do we do that as infants with this little teeny tiny podcast in comparison to anything that Steven Spielberg does? But it got me thinking about that. Am I making a connection with you as a listener where you're feeling my feelings, because of the way that I'm putting them out there. Anyway, so I've been thinking about this a lot. I think that's coming out in what I'm doing with the Chunky Infant Ghost Stories, and trying to create that feeling of excitement and fun around Halloween and share that with you and other things. And the reason I do that, it's an act of love. It's an act of service, creative expression. Obviously, for me, I get a lot out of that too. But knowing that that's going to people who appreciate it, it's great. I love that and want to continue doing that with you. And I hope that you enjoy that and you're feeling that as well. So anyway, with no further ado, I give you Ryan Straub.
Hello.
Hey, how's it going?
Well, thanks for doing this on such short notice.
Oh, no, not a problem.
And I don't know if you've had a chance to check out what the podcast is. I'll give you a little bit of background on it's a bunch of ex-Mormons. And Angelique said that you've studied a lot of religions, and I saw your profile on your website that listed some of the religions that you studied, and that you haven't specifically studied Mormonism. That doesn't matter. But most of our audience, being ex-Mormon, are they lean atheist. And so when I've done interviews in the past, I've done a couple of interviews with a woman who's a psychic, and I get pushback from people in the audience about it. You know, there's some people that they love it. They find it really fascinating. Mm-hmm. And there's others that are like, why would you waste your time talking with people who believe in all this woo woo bullshit stuff? And
right.
So I just want to let you know up front, you know, the audience that listens to this, there's going to be, you're probably used to that anyway. I would imagine.
Now, just to clarify, when I talk about the religions that I've studied, I do go into investigations with 100% scientific mindset. Only after I prove or disprove that there's something there, or if there's something that the people who I'm involved with need some type of spiritual counseling or guidance, that's when I step in. But it's not like I go into every case trying to wave a magic wand to make people feel better about themselves. I'm an ex-cop.
Okay.
I do a lot of investigation techniques based off of that. I've done investigative journalism for many years.
Interesting.
So a lot of the stuff that I do is trying to prove or disprove if there's actually even a haunting in the location.
So tell me a little bit about your background then, Ryan. You were a cop, you were a journalist, some other things that are important for people to know about you.
Absolutely. I started out, and when I was in high school, I had a car wreck that pretty much changed my perception and perspective on life. Mm-hmm. I started studying multiple religions only because I felt like I needed to know more about what was out there and try to understand things that we as a people couldn't really see or understand.
What was it about the car? Did you have like a near-death experience, or was there something that happened associated with the car wreck that put your mind there? Or was it just like recognizing your own mortality?
A little bit of both. I definitely had a near-death experience.
Yeah. Okay.
But it was just coming out of it, I wondered to myself, you know, that really could have been it for me.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, I was very interested in mathematics and engineering and science and physics. And I felt like while that stuff is still vastly important, I feel like I was missing something that I couldn't quite put my finger on. And the town that I grew up in was predominantly Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
So I started talking to the local priest that was there. And he was a gentleman that was also very spiritual as well as religious. And you know that there's a difference between the two.
Yeah. When you're talking about the difference, what is that to you? The difference between somebody who's religious and spiritual?
So religious to me is any of your faiths that follow a guideline for that faith. Catholicism, mm-hmm. Baptism, you know, Buddhism, they all have a guideline and a hierarchy of needs for them to consider themselves Buddhist or Christian. Now, a spiritual individual, in my opinion, is looking not only for those needs, but to experience something bigger than themselves. They want to understand why and not who said why it was possible. Mm-hmm. They don't necessarily say, I need such and such God in my life. They just mm-hmm. need to understand that there's something bigger than themselves that connects all of us together.
Do you think that like atheists can be spiritual?
The term atheist, from what I've understood, is the belief in, or the lack of belief, actually, in a God or a spiritual practice. I believe that anyone has the capability to become spiritual, but maybe they present it in different ways.
Okay.
You know, for example, let's say they're an atheist who's also a martial artist who likes to meditate and find mm-hmm. peace within themselves and silence within themselves. You know, silence, internal silence, is another form of spirituality.
Gotcha. I mean, okay.
That's one of the things that the Buddhists practice. That's one of the things that the many monks all over the world practice.
Yeah.
And to me, yes, it's possible, but it's through their own perspective is what they find spiritual.
Cool. Yeah. All right. I'm with you. So you were explaining your car accident yeah. and how it changed your perception on the world.
Correct. So I started studying these different religions after the priest actually told me, you know, Catholicism's great for people who want to believe in Catholicism, you know. So he said, if it's something that you want to practice, study it, put your life into it, believe in what you want to believe in. But he said, if there's something more, study other things, become who you are and what you want to believe in, because the major core behind any religion or spiritual practice is to teach others how to respect everyone around them, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I started studying the different religions and the different folklores and that kind of thing. And about the time that I turned 18, I was in my senior year, and I ended up doing a term paper on ghosts and the paranormal. And I had always been interested in ghosts and the paranormal. But as I looked more into how to study those things and how people were experiencing the things that they were experiencing, I got hooked very easily. Mm-hmm. So while I was in college, I started doing some investigative journalism where I would interview people. I'd write down their stories and their cases and their histories and try to help them any way that I could. I'm a very avid researcher. Mm-hmm. And that coming from a scientific viewpoint and a scientific background, I wanted to combine the two.
Yeah.
You know, because I don't necessarily think that when you look at a paranormal situation that it should all be science or should all be spiritual. I think science and spirituality or religion are two different branches on the same tree. And I think that once the two finally find a meeting place, it'll be easier for people to come to a consensus, if you will.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So, and then at some point your profile on your website says that you recognize that you were skilled in spiritual warcraft, I think, or warfare.
Yeah. And what I mean by that is I'm not going to go out there with spiritual guns blazing, if you know what I mean. A lot of people who deal with ghosts and deal with spirituality, you know, like anything else, they pick up the energy from it, or they pick up experiences from it, and they don't know how to handle it. Spiritual warfare, in my opinion, isn't just, like I said, go in there and cause a bunch of ruckus and get rid of everything. It's about helping people understand what they experienced, what they went through, and overcoming the fear of the situation that they were involved in.
Okay. So yeah, tell me some stories. Give me some examples of some of the cases that you've investigated, or some of the things that people will come to you, some of the problems that they'll bring to you, and different solutions that you're able to provide to them.
Absolutely. One of the ones that stands out the most in my mind was, it was a case of a 13-year-old girl whose mother had reached out to me, because this girl had claimed that she was having what she described as dark figures with horns and giant claws that would come to her in the middle of the night, and they'd hold her down, and they'd scream in her face, and they wouldn't let her move, and they would basically just immobilize her. And this girl was waking up just horrified. She was afraid to go to sleep, so she would stay days on end awake as long as possible, and it was really causing a decline in her health. And after talking to the mother, I was talking to her about something called old hag syndrome. Old hag syndrome is the folklore name for sleep paralysis, right? And what that is the reason why they called it old hag syndrome is because these people at the time, you know, they were afraid of witches and whatnot, and they described it as an elderly woman who would sit on their chest in the middle of the night and not let them move. And because of that, they would zap their energy from them. And people thought that these creatures were attacking them. And that's where the term hag-ridden came from, as for being fatigued.
Mm-hmm.
And I started explaining this to the mother. And the reason why it doesn't look like a hag to this girl is because as fear changes from one century to the next, you know, demons with all the moves that came out become more prevalent. So after explaining what sleep paralysis was, the girl started seeing a psychologist. And while things were better, the girl herself was not completely comfortable with the fact that it was just something psychological going on in her mind. So I helped do a ritual.
She thought there was something more than just the sleep paralysis, and that she was imagining horned figures because that was part of the cultural zeitgeist that she had inherited. Is that what you're saying?
Correct.
Okay.
Right. So what ended up happening was I did a ritual involving a cleansing and protection in the religion that she was comfortable with,
mm-hmm.
right, as a way to make her feel better spiritually, as well as seeing someone to help her with her psychological trauma as well. So that's a perfect example of something what I call is xenonormal phenomenon. Xenonormal is something that's naturally occurring, sleep paralysis, appearing paranormal. Like you mentioned, it was the cultural referencing to something demonic.
So in, you know, I use the example a lot of Dumbo and the black feather that he had to help him fly. You know, and that black feather is really kind of a placebo of sorts that helped him access whatever power was naturally inside of him, but he thought that it was this supernatural thing, and then realized when he didn't have the feather, he could still fly in and of himself. Do you think that in...
Well, absolutely.
I'm sorry?
I said absolutely. Yep.
Yeah. So that this 13-year-old girl that was seeing a psychiatrist about the sleep paralysis issues, but she still, because she believed that there was something else there, that you did this ritual for her to help her cleanse that inner concern, spiritual concerns that she had. Would you equate that to like a Dumbo's black feather? Kind of what you were offering her, a placebo in that sense? Or do you think that there really is some kind of supernatural, or what was it? Xenonatural? Is that what you called it?
Xenonormal. In that case...
Xenonormal.
Yeah, in that case, it was a psychological influence impairing paranormal. So in that situation, the ritual and the cleansing that we did was for her. It was the black feather, so to speak.
Okay.
But that doesn't mean that it was any less real for the girl, because... together
or effective,
right? Because in her mind,
yeah. We
saw it as one was causing the other. It was her direction of causality that was different.
Yeah. And she felt that she needed it, and that's kind of what dictated the action.
Absolutely.
To do it right.
Yeah. And you know, I've talked to her recently, and she seems to be perfectly happy with how everything turned out. And you know, I honestly think that the psychologist obviously had a big role in helping her, but I think that it was the nice little spiritual nudge that she needed to understand that she was going to be okay.
Cool. So what other types of issues do people bring to you And is your title a paranormal investigator?
Yes.
Okay.
When it comes to the group that I'm in, we have several different people in the group. Each of us have their own specialty, so to speak. You know, I've got some people that deal strictly with technology. Some people deal strictly with research and history of locations. You know, and mine tends to be more spiritual just because I'm not going to be the person who goes in and says everything's a ghost or everything is a spirit. I want to make sure that we're doing everything that we can to help these people out. And some of the cases, I've been contacted from everything from I've got stuff turning on and off of my house. I've got stuff to, I see shadow people or creatures or spirits or demons. I've got, I think my neighbor's possessed. I mean, if you can imagine it, I've heard it. I've been doing this for a very long time. So, and like I said, a lot of it is a toss up between figuring out what is real, what people think are real, and what people are doing to seek attention. You know, because, you know, a person could be like, I know for a fact something's haunted in my house. And like this 13-year-old girl, it doesn't have to always be that case. It's something natural appearing paranormal, like will-o-wisp and foxfire and being swamp gas. So, like I said, I've been doing this for a very long time, and there's tons of different cases that we could talk about.
Yeah, I'd like to hear more.
Okay.
Well, tell me what, like, have you been, do you ever get scared?
I'd like to say that there are times where I feel the heebie-jeebies, right?
Yeah.
But like I said, I've been doing this for so long and I know how to read people pretty well. And I do my lots of extensive history. I mean, there's been times where I've been out in the middle of nowhere and something has jumped out and I've jumped, but,
like, have you ever been in a situation, you know, like, so somebody calls you and says, I think my house is haunted. There's weird things going on, the lights switching on and off, that sort of thing. And there's this one room in the house that's just cold. Like, I just walk into it and the temperature drops 10 degrees, you know, something like that. Have you had those kinds of experiences where you're like, ooh, there is something here going on that feels weird? It's not just inside this other person's head.
Well, yeah. I mean, I've been to many cases where I felt like there was something going on, but even though my personal feelings may lean towards the spiritual, I will attack everything from a scientific viewpoint first, just because I'm going to need that as a baseline for my investigation. Now, I've been into, there's a really old house in Missouri that I've been into because people were saying that they're experiencing a lot of paranormal phenomenon, shadow people, stuff coming on and off, TVs coming on and off. You know, the main downstairs foyer area that led into the living room, they said that place, you can go in there in the middle of the night and you just feel like someone's watching you. Just absolutely feel like someone's watching you. And we went in there and sure enough, that's exactly what it felt like. It definitely felt like there were or was someone in the room. Now, that turned out to be electric phenomenon that is called infrasound. Infrasound is a very low humming that's produced by electrical or cables and that kind of thing, electricity. And if it reaches a certain hertz, people can feel like they're being watched. It'll literally cause your hair to stand on end. And that's what it actually turned out as an old house where a lot of the wiring had gone bad. But yeah, those feelings and those emotions do arise in people, especially if you're out there investigating as much as we have been.
So when you do an investigation like that and you find that the cause is a very natural cause, like these wires, what's the reaction of your clients? Are they just thankful that you fixed the problem, or are they a little disappointed that they didn't actually have a ghost?
You know, that's a really good question because it varies and it's usually 50-50. Some people are like,
yeah,
man, I'm super excited that it was just that. But then they feel silly because they're like,
yeah,
I was scared because it was some wires, right? And then you've got people who were like, no, that can't be it. There's a ghost in my house. We'll call another team, right? So like I said, it depends on why you're calling in the first place. Are you calling to get help? Or are you calling to become famous? You know, and that, unfortunately, in this field, that's something that you deal with on a regular basis, because with the dawn of Photoshop and photo editing software, and, you know, the fact that anybody can do it, if you watch a YouTube video, it's really easy to fake this type of phenomenon. So with that in mind, as investigators, we have to evolve as well. So when it comes to those people, you know, it's kind of hit or miss. Why did you call me in the first place? Did you really want help, or did you want to be known for what was going on in your life?
So do you have a story, an experience where you did your investigation and your conclusion was that you uncovered a fraud and presented to the people that hired you?
Oh, absolutely.
I want to hear that.
Without naming.
Yeah, you don't name any names. I'm curious how this goes.
Yeah, without naming any names, I was called into a place in Kansas City, Missouri, where there was another group who was going through this house with us at the same time, because the house was very large. And we had been contacted by the homeowners because they kind of felt like something was amiss with this other group. Well, we went in there, we were watching this other group do their rituals, and they were very gung-ho about everything, and everything was evil, and everything had to be getting rid of everything.
So these are like, when you're saying other group, these are some of your competitors.
That are
called in to do a similar thing to what you were called in to do.
Right. I wouldn't necessarily call them competitors, but just a different group in a large mass of people who have the same interest. Okay.
Okay. Right.
But what ended up happening was we found out that the ritual that this guy had claimed that he had been doing for 20 years, he was actually hiding a piece of paper that he had printed off the internet that he was reading off the internet, you know, instead of reading out of his Bible. So he was going around saying that he had been doing this for years, and it was just something he had printed off an hour before he came to the house. And then his medium actually would hide in the house and cut himself with razor blades and then come out and say that it was this creature that was doing it.
How did you catch that?
One of our other investigators went into the room and put up a bunch of cameras to see if we could catch anything. And he didn't know they were in there, and he was hiding and looking around the corner, and he cut himself a bunch of times. And,
wow.
Came out screaming and said that something had attacked him, and we had it all on video that it was not true. So
cool.
Well, it's sad, honestly. You know, it's one of those things that the paranormal has always been considered.
I was saying cool that they were caught.
Gotcha. The paranormal, unfortunately, has always gotten a rap that it's a bunch of crazy people doing quasi-science. And the reason why that is because as much as we as investigators would like to say that we have the answers or we have the equipment to do so, we haven't found any equipment that can, you know, actually record and produce evidence that is quality, you know, because we don't know the secrets of the paranormal or the supernatural. And we're using cameras, and we're using EMF detectors, and we're using audio recorders. All of this stuff was created for another purpose. You know, we're just using science to our best knowledge to try to figure out how to gather evidence that we know very little about.
What's an EMS detector?
EMF detector is a detector that records and, well, I'm sorry, not records. It shows if there's any electromagnetic field in the area. EMF stands for electromagnetic fields.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. So you've got this equipment that helps people produce evidence, but problem is we don't know if that evidence is actually anything related to the paranormal, because we haven't reached a type of technology yet that allows us to prove or disprove the existence of ghosts. So
yeah.
it's now the issue is you have a lot of quantity evidence with very little quality evidence. And that's why me, as a spiritual investigator, I tend to try to treat and help the people that are involved in the case and not so much worry about how much evidence can I collect to prove one way or the other. So
give me some other experiences. When you're telling friends and family about what you do, what are some of your favorite stories to share with them?
Well, one of the most interesting, in my opinion, just because it happened to me, was I was 17 and I was with my aunt, and we were coming back from my grandma's house, which is out in the middle of nowhere in Brunswick. And Brunswick is a small town in Missouri. And we were going home, and we decided we were going to take the long way home because it was nice outside. It was a warm summer evening, and I hadn't seen my aunt in a long time because she lives out of state. Well, we come across this gentleman who is in his full construction garb, and he's got a sign saying that the road was closed because of a wreck. And we said, well, what's the best way to get back around? I told him where we were going, and he said, go down the end of the hill here. At the end of the hill, there's a left you can take, and it'll take you right down into Marceline. And we say, okay, we go down the hill. The only thing down there is an old graveyard. And there's no left other than turning into this graveyard. So we go down there, and we sit for a minute. Maybe we missed it, and we turn back around, and we're heading back up there, and we get to the point where that construction worker was, and there was nobody there. So I don't know if, and it'd only been maybe 4 or 5 minutes. So I don't know if it was just someone messing with us or if there was actually something paranormal to that, but it was just very intriguing to have this person there with all the lights and everything going, just to turn around a couple minutes later and then we'll be gone.
Be gone, yeah.
Now,
cool.
Yeah, that's interesting. Let me see here. There is a small cemetery also in Missouri called Hazel Ridge Cemetery. And that place is very active. And what I mean by that is I've had a lot of experiences there. And my group and I went out, and it was actually kind of a pretty slow night. We had taken some photos, not really gotten anything. So we decided that we were going to leave an audio recorder on one of the tombstones and go get some dinner at a local restaurant. We go to the restaurant, we come back, and we're listening to the audio recorder, and it sounds like chipmunks talking over this audio recorder. So we hooked it up to the computer and we slowed it down, and it was a little girl singing Ring Around the Rosie. And
do you still have that recording?
I do. We went back to the tombstone that we put it on, and it was a tombstone of a 7-year-old girl.
Wow.
Yeah, that was pretty fun. It's the stuff.
So you only recognized it as a girl singing when you slowed it down. When it was played at normal speed, it sounded like chipmunk.
Yeah, it sounded like. The reason why I say chipmunks is because it was very jittery,
fast,
very chattery.
Oh,
yeah.
Jittery. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. By slowing it down, though, that's exactly what it was. So, very interesting.
Interesting. So the scientific skeptical mind of yours, when you get something like that, what do you do with it? Do you think's going on?
I have always said that I am not the best when it comes to technology. So I always refer to that case in particular to other members of the group. But I don't know. It could have been someone went down there and fast forwarded. And I don't know if you can fast forward and record at the same time. I'm not sure. But all I know is that's one of the stories that I like to tell just because of how interesting the evidence is.
Yeah. The only thing that I can think of, if somebody saw what you were doing, and when you guys left, they went and played a joke on you or something,
if it was a tape recorder that had batteries that were low, and they sang Ring Around the Rosies, and you know, then the tape ran out because the battery ran out. Then when you played it at regular speed, it would sound like sped up, kind of chipmunkish, like that. But like that would have to be the conditions for that. Because I don't know how anybody else would be able to put that sped up chipmunk sound on there playing a joke. So that's an interesting story conundrum you've got there. Cool.
Yeah, it's very interesting.
Have you ever made contact with a ghost or spirit on the other side as part of your investigations?
You mean actually sat down and try to have a conversation with a spirit for somebody or a ghost for somebody?
Yeah. And I don't even know how that would work. I mean, if it's like a medium doing that, or if it's just you see something happen while you're in there, you know, something floating across the room, or, you know, or something like that, that you actually see with your own eyes or you hear with your own ears while you're there in your presence.
Well, I work with a few different mediums who communicate with people. And the way we try to validate what they say is we do not tell them anything about the location or the people that we're dealing with prior to going. So when they go in there, they don't know anything about the case whatsoever. And one of the mediums that we've done some work with, we brought into this house and we asked her, do you get anything from anything? What's going on? How do you feel about the situation? And she said, I have a strong presence that there's a woman that used to sit in this corner. And what it looked like, she said, was a very old recliner that she used to sit in. But it wasn't made, it was very old. And I go, she said that she felt like she killed herself there. And she described what she looked like. She described, you know, the clothes and that kind of thing. And the homeowner started bawling, just became erratic. Her mother, about 5 years prior, sat in that recliner and turned the shotgun on herself.
Oh.
And described everything to a T. So I've seen cases like that. I've seen psychics go into places and just, hey, do you know anyone named Mary or Bob or Sue or, you know, Jennifer? And people go, no. And they're like, oh, well, that's what I'm getting. And then they leave. Mm-hmm. So now I was working a case.
Can I ask a question though about the woman that turned the gun on? So in that case, what was the resolution? Like, what were you hired to do, and what was the resolution for that case?
We went in because the woman who was living there kept feeling like the elderly lady, her mom, was still there. You know, they'd hear cabinet doors opening, closed. They'd smell her perfume. They would smell. She used to smoke cigarettes, so they used to smoke cigarette smoke, and they wanted us to help her mother move on. So what we did is we went in, since it was such a delicate case, we didn't want to be like, listen, this is a case that is completely scientific, you're making stuff up. We wanted to help them along. So the medium that we was there helped them through a guided meditation that allowed them to say, Mom, we love you. We forgive you for what we did, what you did. It's okay to move on. So, in that situation, we burnt resins that we're comfortable with. They were very Catholic. So we burnt, you know, your frankincense, your myrrh, your copal. We read out of the Bible. And we all just said a prayer for the woman who had passed and taken her own life. And shortly after, everything went back to normal, and there was no other issues with the house. So now the case that I was going to tell you about was when we were in Illinois, in a small town called Piatone. We were actually investigating an old brothel that was owned by Al Capone. Ooh. And I was in the basement looking, you know, down there, looking at all the stuff that was down in the old cellar. and I had myself and a camera person with me, and I swear to you, I saw someone, and like shadow person, dragging another person, and it looked like they were carrying a bat, like a baseball bat. And I started talking to the owner of the place, and I didn't say what I experienced. It was all on film what I had experienced. I said, this is what I saw. I thought I heard the bat hit somebody, you know. We went upstairs, and I said, do you know of any situation here? You know, why do you think this place is haunted? And she said, oh, there used to be several people that, who, you know, were on the bad side of Capone that they used to take down in the Stellar, and they used to beat them to death with baseball bats. And I go, well, that's
like in the movie Untouchables.
Exactly.
So I was like, enthusiasms.
Well, yeah, I go, that's horrifying.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. So that was always kind of interesting.
Yeah, I get chills when you're telling these stories. Do you get chills when you're telling them, or are they so like second nature, old hat to you now? You're just like, it's just, this is my life.
Oh no, they're well. You know, I feel like this is my life quite a bit. You know, I feel like others trying to look in on this field, it's hard for them to understand. But there are times where I'm in this field looking to try to explain to other people, and I realize this is really hard to explain. So
yeah,
there are times where I get chills. Like the one in Piatone I was telling you about, the one where the medium said, this is exactly what I'm getting, and that's exactly what happened, you know? I'm not immune to goosebumps, so.
Right. Yeah, neither am I, apparently.
Well, that's good to know. Happy Halloween.
Cool. Yeah, cool. So anything else, Ryan?
No, I mean, if there's anything else in particular, I mean, we could keep this conversation going for months, my friend, so.
Oh, yeah, well, it's fascinating. So you've got a website, you've got a group. I mean, it sounds like you're located in Kansas City.
I was in Kansas City. I live in Nampa, Idaho right now.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. All right. Too bad, because my little sister, who I love scaring, and ever since we were kids, just love scaring her with ghost stories. She lived in Leawood, Kansas. She just recently moved. But I really wanted to get you to talk about how haunted Leawood actually is, because that would really creep her out. And she's listening to this right now, and she's getting chills and laughing. But
well, there's a lot of haunted.
No, I mean, once this is published, she'll be listening to it. Not like she's listening right now.
Oh no. Well, yeah, I know there's a lot of stuff in Leawood, Kansas that's haunted. Alexander Majors Historical Museum. God, I think Pretty Boy Floyd's is over there, right, in Leawood, or close to Leawood. So, yeah, like I said, if she wants to be put in touch with me, that's perfectly fine. I can tell her all the crazy places to go.
Oh, I think she'd want to avoid you at all costs and anything. Like, she just wants to pretend that there's nobody out there that ever even thinks about ghosts.
Yeah. Oh, well, that sounds like most of my family, too, so...
Yeah. Well, hey, thanks. And unless you have any other like stories that are like really good, kind of bone chilling, and you want to give me the goosebumps again.
Yeah, sure. I'll give you one more, and all then right. I'll leave you to it. Awesome. So we were in Hazel Ridge, that place in Brunswick, Missouri. And the way that cemetery looks is it's out in the middle of nowhere, and you've got to take a very long, thin gravel road to get to it. Well, in the middle of the two very big hills that you have to go through, there's a small bridge on either side of, well, not bridge, I'm sorry. There's a small creek on either side of the road. We are at the cemetery, another fairly quiet night. And as we're leaving, we're at the top of the hill closest to the cemetery. And it looks like there's a very large farm dog sitting in the middle of the road. So we edge in our car, get closer and closer and closer to it, and it's facing the other direction, doesn't even seem to care that we're there. We get about 10 feet away from it, and I flash my brights at it, and I honk my horn, and that thing stands up on its back legs, turns and looks at us, takes two steps, standing up on the back legs, and jumps off the road down into the creek bed.
Did it have red glowing eyes?
No, it didn't.
I was picturing red glowing eyes the whole time. And I'm like, it's going to turn around with red glowing eyes. And I was starting to get scared.
Well,
but standing on its hind legs is pretty weird.
That was, I've got goosebumps, Tony, that story. The eyes reflected like any other dog would, but the fact that it stood up on its back legs and looked at us, everyone in the group was like, that's a werewolf. And I'm like, that's just a really talented, large dog. I don't know who's right, but I'll leave you with that one. And if you ever would like to talk again, just let me know.
Cool. All right. Thanks, Ryan. And would you wish everyone happy Halloween for Infants on Thrones?
Oh, absolutely. Have a very happy and safe Halloween. Keep your eyes open.
Cool. Thanks. Thanks, Ryan.
Have a good one. Bye.
Okay. Take care.
Hello, brothers and sisters. This is Elder E. Eldon Elderman of the Seventh Quorum of the 70. When I'm not interviewing children about their masturbation practices, I monitor the Infants on Thrones podcast for the Strengthening the Members Committee. If you really like what you hear, you can jeopardize your eternal salvation by giving the Quorum a 5-star rating and writing a short review on iTunes. I didn't, but that's because I want to be resurrected with my genitalia intact. Anyone for the closing prayer?
Thank you for listening to
Infants on Thrones.
Infants on Thrones.